I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzolo back here with Sam Monson. That's right. We've got another show this week. We've got so much to say now.
Yeah, and platform to say it.
And a platform to say it. Our third show of the week, PFF NFL podcast. Remember, we're on Mondays. We're now adding a Wednesday show, which we had yesterday with Mike Renner over here at PFF. Great discussion, talking a little cut day, talking rookies, and now our Thursday show. And we're 1 week away, Sam, from opening night.
Yeah.
You ready for it, man?
Well, yeah, but it's not here for another week. I'm ready for now.
We have three shows, including today.
This week is kind of strange. It's like preseason's done. All right, where's the game? Where's the football?
What they usually did was this was preseason week four, normally. This is where every team would play tonight on a Thursday.
So they've got rid of the week, but they haven't like changed the schedule.
Yeah.
I'm ready for football now.
I like the big build-up to the season. 2 weeks, let guys get healthy. And let's go.
But nobody has got healthy. Everyone's got injured.
Yeah, they mostly were put on pup list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So that didn't help.
Speaking of pup list, we've got the PFF NFL Daily discussed today some of the injuries that will impact the 2021 season, talking things like David Bakhtiari, Michael Thomas, Irv Smith with Minnesota Vikings. So go check out the PFF Daily. Remember, it's audio only. Wherever you listen to these podcasts, click subscribe and then send me a screenshot. I will be giving away Edge subscriptions. I'll do one on Monday, Labor Day. If you send me screenshots of Daily plus PFF NFL podcast subscription.
It looks like you're safe. You're not going to get launched through a table. The donations have stalled.
Yeah, because we haven't really pushed it. So yeah. I got to get the jersey set. We have to get that ready. I think
yes.
It's time to
signing. We have cleared the amount we need to raise for you to sign the Josh Allen apology form wearing the Josh Allen jersey. That's all good. If anybody would like to see a giant human launch through a table, though, that's going to take some deep reaching into the pockets that we haven't had.
I'm really going to do. I mean,
you
think somebody wants to see that so bad they'll drop like 8,000 in there?
I mean, look, there's some really rich people out there. True. I'm not one of them, but like, you know, if there's people out there with that kind of cash on hand and they want to see the hilarity of a 6'10", 200 and whatever pound man being launched through a table, I'm just saying there's worse ways of spending money. So it all goes to charity. It's all for a good cause. And you get to see, you know, you potentially maim yourself.
We did raise $2,000 for Hope for Women over in Kentucky.
And as everybody knows, or as the Jackass franchise has proven, severe risk of injury is hilarious, particularly when it's yours.
Kickoff 30 is our promo code. Let's just change in the subject here. 30% off all your PFF subscriptions right now. Do your fantasy. Get all your fantasy tools for as little as $7. I know you have a draft, probably tonight. A lot of drafts tonight, tomorrow. So don't go into your draft without PFF's tools. PFF Kickoff 30 over at PFF.com. Kickoff 30. What did you title this thing? Playing GM, fixing the hopeless teams, and the path out of purgatory for others. Let's talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start with that?
Houston. Most hopeless of all the teams.
The Houston Texans.
Fix it. Go.
Well, I would have started fixing it before the draft. I would have drafted differently.
Okay.
I would not have...
Set fire to the Davis Mills pick?
I don't think it was fire.
Mike Renner said fire. Said lit it on fire. Draft night. That's what he said.
I mean, so far that...
Took the pick, torched it.
So far that seems...
And right now on their depth chart, they have a blank space in front of his name as the backup. Now, okay, that's just because they cut the backup that was ahead of them on the depth chart, and they have
you might be looking too far into
they haven't rearranged the formatting
internet depth charts,
but it does feel like it's a perfect symbolism of the Davis Mills situation right now.
Given the situation we're in right now, this strategy that I think we've talked about, where they would trade current players for future draft picks, I don't think that's a crazy one. So I could see the Texans going into the season and hoping, you know, Kevin Pierre-Lewis and Desmond King and Marcus Cannon and some of these guys play well enough to trade by the trade deadline. As, you know, as soon as there's a right tackle injury, you dangle Marcus Cannon.
So your plan to fix the Texans is to trade away anybody that's playing even vaguely well this season to the point where anybody might want them.
Correct.
Okay.
Future draft capital.
Ben Stockwell just sent me a text to give me a better way of summing up, actually, the point that I was making. He said, it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt, and then it's fucking hilarious.
If it's me.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's me.
Yeah, yeah, if it's you. I'm all on board.
The only thing keeping me going here is a little sense of pride.
Yeah,
you think that pride that I could become a legend with a Macho Man elbow through a table and pull it off, and Tony Khan's gonna come calling with wrestling contract.
You know the way Austin like created his own GIF of him, you know, in the studio with like "Let's Go." You could have one of you launching yourself through a table. Think how great that would be.
Yeah.
Anytime something happens that requires like a you know reaction GIF, here comes Steve through a table. Yeah, there's a lot of mileage in that. Don't be so quick to dismiss it.
Can we get back to the Texans here?
Sure.
I think at this point, I don't. The Watson thing is obviously the huge question mark.
Yeah.
Would you were of the mind that they should have traded him before all the allegations, right? That they should have traded him or tried to, really quick, they were going to trade him because they weren't talking. They were not.
Yeah, he wanted out before any of this came up. Like, he wanted gone and was fairly steadfast and adamant that there was no way that that was being repaired. At which point, I don't see how you can keep like a franchise quarterback that wants no part of being there.
I've got some people asking me the plural form of Hail Marys, our IT guys.
Yeah,
it's just the
same. Hail Mary.
It's not
like,
IES.
Like attorneys general.
It's not IES. It's just Y.
Right? Yeah,
yeah. Just making sure we spell things correctly. Before all the allegations, I thought that they would reconcile, but I also think a clean split and just restarting the organization wouldn't have been the worst thing for the Texans. But it really would have had to be like 3 firsts and the equivalent of 2 seconds when it comes to players.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, as much as the rumors are swirling now, it feels like that's completely off the table at the moment. I cannot countenance any team in the NFL, even knowing what we know about how willing teams are to overlook, you know, egregious and hideous off-field things. I cannot see how a team can put that much on the table given what is hanging over Deshaun Watson right now.
The tricky part about this rebuild is when you're asking about a rebuild, like we'll talk about the Eagles, we'll talk about the Broncos. When you go up and down the depth chart in the roster, there's not a whole lot of players that you identify on this team where it's like, yeah, he'll be here in 2 years. He'll be a part of our rebuild in 2 years. Brandon Cooks and Laremy Tunsil are the two best players on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And Tunsil could be there, sure. But even him, you know, he's a guy that is probably valuable around the NFL. That you're probably better off getting multiple draft picks for him if that's available and just continuing to just load up. I mean, if my strategy with the Texans would be to try to draft 14 or 15 times in each of the next 3 drafts, as much as I possibly could, through trading down, through trading current players, try to bring in, said 35 players over the next 3 drafts, 35, 40 players.
This is as bad a situation in terms of the current state of a team or the current state of a franchise as I can remember at any point.
Yeah.
I think somebody asked us that recently, and like the closest you could come up with was the Browns at the bottom of the, you know, 1-31 run of games, or like this is a worse situation than the winless Detroit Lions. Like, it's
there's a difference between being bad now and having, like, even when the Browns were bad, it's like, all right, they drafted Myles Garrett and they're starting to bring players in and the whole deal. We just don't have that in Houston.
And most of those teams that were terrible had a ton of cap space. Like, they knew that things were going badly. They were sort of primed for some kind of rebuild, and they had assembled some kind of capital, whether it's draft picks, whether it's cap space, whether it's a combination of both of them, so that they can actually achieve this. If you fast forward to next year, the Texans don't have a ton of cap space. Like, this isn't the purge before everything gets better. This is just bad, and on the horizon is more bad. There's no pathway to this being good anytime soon.
Yeah, so that's why, honestly, I think they should have a 3-year goal of bringing in 35 to 40 players in the draft. Then if that is the foundation of the team, then an offseason that looks like this offseason, which I don't think that's the play going forward, but this offseason of bringing in a whole bunch of Mark Ingrams and just veterans and what have you. I also don't know that David Culley's the guy as head coach. He felt like an afterthought. I mean, predicting good head coaches is really, really difficult. So I don't want to write him off right now, but it is, I just don't know. We don't know if he's the guy. So I would evaluate him this year. I would give him a year to see.
And that's going to be a pretty rough evaluation because what has he got to work with? I mean, we're talking about this being the worst situation in the NFL for decades, and you're going to send him out there and go, well, you didn't do a great job.
Yeah, I wouldn't judge it by wins and losses. I would judge it by, like, did the team over the very low expectations that we have, did they exceed those?
So, I mean, their biggest issue, as with every team that sucks, is quarterback. And theirs is the most complicated in the world because you've got 22 civil lawsuits, criminal charges, everything sitting over Deshaun Watson. And he doesn't want to be there. Even if all that evaporated tomorrow and we got to wipe the slate clean and we, like, you know, pretend none of that happened, he still doesn't want to be there. So they have to get rid of him. I mean, now you're in a situation where you have to trade him, but the prospect of getting the kind of value that his situation in abstract terms, i.e. young, elite player on the field and tied down to a long contract, that should return you the 3 first-round picks, the multiple second rounds, the bells and whistles that they want to get for that trade. But I can't see how it will because nobody can possibly give that up for a player that has his situation.
My feeling is if things are cleared up by next March, that's probably when the value potentially goes back.
That's their time to trade him, regardless of like
so
where everything is.
So window's closed, hold on to him. Right. He's just sitting on the roster, taking up a spot
burning
this year.
Burning money and, yeah, a
which is fine. I would continue to do that. So that's my Texans plan. Caserio does do a pretty good job on the pro... you know, the pro scouting side. And again, that's why it's bring in 25 players who have played in the NFL.
Now you're Mr. You can't go out there designed to lose. Right now they have Tyrod Taylor as their starter, a blank space, and then Davis Mills. are you happy with that? Or are you trying to find somebody slightly less depressing at quarterback to go into the season? Like, you know,
the blank space is depressing enough. Yeah.
Yeah. But the likes of Nick Foles are going to be available for trade.
No, that's not helping you tank better.
That's what I'm saying. You are actively trying to stink this year. You're not trying to upgrade.
You would put Davis Mills out there if you want to tank.
Oh, God.
I think they're in good enough position.
Can
to
you
tank.
Do that to a team? Can you say, hey, guys, Davis is the guy this year?
No, the balance is getting. The balance of owning the locker room and just earning trust with the guys, that it's
because you do that,
it is a big thing.
Nobody's there. Everyone's leaving.
No, you do have to build trust. It is a bigger issue, I think, than maybe we've thought through the years and all that stuff. So it is you have to make it seem like you're trying to win, but understand you've built a roster that is ready for Spencer Rattler or whoever the top quarterback is come April. And they should be in position. They should be in position for a top quarterback.
This team should have the number one overall pick next year.
Yes.
Now, the question, this becomes interesting, though, with the state of the roster as it currently is, that number one overall pick is dead in the water. Like, that's a Josh Rosen situation in Arizona. Like, you go in there, there's no shot of that guy having to do anything.
No,
because everything around him is bad.
I think there are ways to turn things around quicker than...
Enough... You would have to go hard in free agency next year before you have the quarterback, draft and put all that together and dedicate it all to offense.
That was what I was
going
to say.
So that guy has any shot of surviving.
That was what I was going to say. So if you're worried about – so what happened with Josh Rosen, just to remind people, in 2018, Arizona had by far the worst offensive line in the league. And when we were breaking that down, like, they were setting records for not just pressures allowed, but speed to pressure and all that stuff. It was horrible. The receiver situation also wasn't great for Rosen over there either. So everything was bad in Arizona. So if you know what the Texans should be doing is getting guys like Marcus Cannon, right? I mean, if you're not going to trade Marcus Cannon, having a solid right tackle like that, having solid offensive linemen through free agency, you can build up the offense well enough that your quarterback is not going to be in a horrible situation. Just looking at last year's free agency, for instance, if next year you get a Matt Filer equivalent, you know, a swing guard tackle who's a good solid player, you spend the money for one other tackle or center or whatever it might be that you need a year from now, like, you can get the offensive line back on track. Honestly, like what Kansas City did this offseason, if you're just trying to create an ecosystem where your quarterback's not going to get crushed, I think that's doable in an offseason, and that would be the focus. So the Texans go get a quarterback, you focus on offense in year one, and then you start to stitch it together on defense as you go.
Guys like Laurent Duvernay-Tardif will be a free agent next year.
There you go. So you're looking ahead.
Doctor.
You're looking ahead to who might be available. I think you could put that all together.
It's not a great list of interior offensive linemen, but there'll be, you know, a couple of targets.
Where else? What other teams? You mentioned the Eagles.
Yeah, so the Eagles are an interesting one because they've clearly focused on next year. So what do you do?
Yeah, so you evaluate Jalen Hurts this year.
Sure.
Right, so you evaluate.
Let's make some assumptions about that because, you know, he's probably not going to be great.
So let's say Jalen Hurts. Tyrod Taylor was not a bad comp for Jalen Hurts coming out. In that, I think they're both quarterbacks who work. Time to throw is high.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrod takes a few more sacks than Hurts, but I think Hurts was a little bit more on the, you know, too many negative plays from a pass game perspective. They're both capable of hitting open throws. It's just a lot of times it's a longer developing, shallow, deeper crosses and various things like that. So it's like schemed up open throws. I think Hurts can hit. I think Tyrod can hit.
Tyrod was the difference between the two is that Tyrod was always extremely risk averse and didn't put the ball in harm's way.
Whereas Hurts
will.
Hurts is, but he wasn't in his four starts when he was a rookie and was thrown in there. So I don't know if that's Hurts' DNA.
I mean, I think that I don't know that he is, as opposed to was in a situation where he could get away with that in college in the offense that he was in.
True. I mean, he played at Bama and he played at Oklahoma.
Right. Whereas once you get to the NFL, I think he's prone to more mistakes with the ball than Tyrod Taylor is. Whereas Taylor's issue is Taylor was essentially Alex Smith with wheels.
Yeah.
Like that's essentially what you're dealing with Tyrod Taylor. He was incredibly risk averse, could make some big plays, but didn't because he wouldn't put the ball in the air very often. And instead of Alex Smith, who would get rid of the ball extremely quickly and extremely shallow, Taylor would just hold on to it until he saw something open or would take off and make plays.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling is that Hurts is a low-end starter or high-end backup. And again, that is in today's landscape in the NFL. You could probably name 25 players, quarterbacks that are better than him, right? If not more.
Yeah.
As far as your comfort level. Could he get better than that? Sure, absolutely. Hurts could, you know, with two more years on his contract after this year, he could be my high-end backup soon. But I want to get better at quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I anticipate you coming out of this season, if you're the Eagles, safe in the knowledge that Hurts is not a starter but is a useful backup.
I would also start to think about, again, you go up and down the roster, okay, who's going to be a part of my rebuild here? And I think it's full rebuild mode for the Eagles. By the way, I think there is a world where Jalen Hurts gets, I don't know their schedule off the top of my head, but there is a world where Jalen Hurts, the run game, Jalen Hurts is capable of playing good football. Like, it's not, he's not bad necessarily. There's a world where they go start 4-2 and feel good about themselves, right? Like that could happen with the Eagles. I would caution against feeling good about yourself if that's the case. I just don't think they sustain that if they get off to a good start.
So if Hurts is that player, i.e., you know, you're vaguely happy with him as your backup, you are no longer happy with him as your starter because you haven't done that well, what's the Eagles' record? 5-6 wins?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. So if they get 5-6 wins, they're picking somewhere in the top 10?
Yes.
So that leaves them with a pick of their own in the top 10 somewhere, a first-round pick from the Miami Dolphins, which is probably 20 and lower.
It could be anywhere, honestly.
Sure, let's ballpark it, 20.
Let's give the Dolphins credit.
So you're picking number 8, you're picking number 20. You then have a second-round pick of your own, which is going to be somewhere in the top 10 of the second round. You have a second-round pick from the Colts, which could become a number 1 if Wentz stays upright for the season, and then 3, 4, 5.
So there's potential 3 first-rounders.
So there are potentially 3 first-rounders, none of which are likely to be your own is the only is the highest one. So one that starts off somewhere at the bottom end of the top 10, and then two more that might propel you higher.
It's a good spot to be in, man. It's a good spot to either, you know, try to trade up, because we don't know if Spencer Rattler is going to come out and just be the clear top guy. Right. This isn't a Trevor Lawrence type of situation.
As Mike said yesterday, when we were talking about those guys.
They could be wide open. Yeah, we talked to Renner a little bit about this quarterback
just
class.
For, like, the 49ers essentially set the market this year, you know, in terms of if you're picking 12, it costs you the equivalent of three firsts to get up to number three.
So the Eagles have the opportunity to potentially do that. I would also, as we talked about with the Texans, trading away guys. Do you go through the season and say, okay, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, do you start to look at flipping those guys? Because they've added a lot of youth to their defensive line over the last couple of years. They've tried to overhaul that thing.
Are the Eagles in the category of Denver and Washington next offseason in terms of an attractive venue for Aaron Rodgers? Because Aaron Rodgers, everyone assumes now, is gone after this year, right? They piece things back together. They readjusted his contract. It now looks like next year is the break point, right? Rodgers is going to get out of Green Bay. Denver is the obvious one because we've been talking about this team as a championship caliber roster without any kind of quarterback. I think Washington is in a similar category where they have a really good roster and they have no quarterback, which is why they went with Fitzpatrick. That's not a long-term solution. Philadelphia have clearly positioned themselves to be able to attack the draft with those potential three first-round picks. But what if you could say to Rodgers, hey, this is not a bad roster. You come on, it's immediately a playoff team. And now we can deploy three first-round picks to add, like, legitimate impact talent. We'll get you
number one wide receiver. Aaron, I'll let you scout those receivers.
Right, well, look, yeah, we'll get a number one wide receiver for you, in addition to Devontae Smith, who came on board last year and is amazing, despite the quarterback situation. We'll get you, you know, another brand-new whatever. Like, we get toys. We've got some room to play with. Okay, we're not as good as the Denver roster top to bottom right now, but Denver doesn't have three first-round picks to throw at it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a world where we could come out of the season and say, okay, the Eagles roster is definitely the worst right now out of Washington.
Right, but they have the most ammo to attack it with.
Yeah, I don't think it's the most attractive spot for Rodgers, who's going to want something more complete, but it's a possibility. I do also wonder if the Packers are going to control Rodgers' rights, if it has to be one of those trade him to the AFC deals, and it's Miami, it's Denver, it's the Raiders, or whatever those other rumored teams were. But I think that's another part of the strategy in today's NFL, right? We always talk about the quarterback, which of course needs to be solved. It is a cheat code if you have a, you know, Matt Ryan inflection point or better quarterback. You have to have your roster in good shape so that you can pounce when Aaron Rodgers is available, or Watson, or Russell Wilson. If Russ comes back and he's on Dan Patrick next year, upset in March, you can, you know, pick up the phone and say, Russ, we love you in Philadelphia. You'll never get booed here. You know, this is your spot. So you have to have your roster in good shape. So my strategy for all these teams would be to throw a ton of resources at the roster so it's good and solid and, you know, a good place for either a rookie contract quarterback or a superstar quarterback. And I think that's the bottom line here, because we're going to talk about the Vikings too. You want to go to the Vikings?
Well, let's finish Philadelphia first. Like, if they get their number one quarterback next year in the top of the draft, it costs them probably all three of those first-round picks to achieve. Certainly two of them, I would say. I think your offense is in reasonable shape immediately. I mean, that offensive line should be okay. The offensive playmakers should be okay. I mean, it's going to depend how Devontae Smith plays this year, but, like, you like the talent that they have there. The issue that they're going to have at that point is that all of the pieces that they've had on that defense for a decade are all getting older, you know, year on year, and you're going to need at some point to be able to replace them with capable successors. Like, where is Brandon Graham's heir apparent? Where is Fletcher Cox's heir apparent? Now, maybe it becomes Milton Williams, and he looks amazing year one, and boom, done. But if it isn't, and you've had to spend most of your resources to get the new quarterback, you've all of a sudden, I mean, we've been saying for a while, like, Philadelphia's roster is actually pretty good. They've just sort of, they've been unlucky in a few spots and they haven't had the quarterback. Like, now, if they spend, like, they might be in a situation where that flips. Suddenly they find a quarterback, but everything else around him is eroded, almost like the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, it's they're in a tough spot, man, because yeah, those both lines have been strong since forever. I mean, since 2015, we're talking one of the best pass rushing defensive lines, one of the best offensive lines in the league. They have had that strong foundation for a while, and the Eagles are honestly one of the simplest teams to evaluate going backwards. Trenches have been strong forever. Once they were better on the perimeter, they were a contender. When they were bad on the perimeter, they weren't. I mean, that's the bottom line with the Eagles. So trying to get back, I think, to that structure is making sure the foundation is strong, and then attack on the perimeter, I think, would be the way to go for the Eagles. We got Manscapes coming up soon here too. I didn't know it was for today's show, but first I got to tell you about Fantrax before we get into the next segment, because Fantrax is free. Fantasy Football League Manager is the most customizable, easy to use, and feature-rich platform in the entire industry. PFF's gearing up to play our leagues on Fantrax this season. They feature multi-team trades, bonus points for touchdowns of different yardage, and if you're coming from another site, it's not a problem. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues completely free. That's a huge selling point, Sam. So you can go create a free account now using the promo code PFF at Fantrax.com/PFF and get a chance to win a trip to any regular season game this year for you or your entire league, plus $6,000. Where would you want to go? It's promo code PFF at Fantrax.com/PFF.
I want to go to Mark Davis's new house. Is that on the list?
I didn't see that.
You see his house, though?
No, I didn't see his house.
It looks pretty amazing. It looks, I mean, Nate Tice tweeted that he genuinely thought it was the practice facility, like the new practice facility they built with Allegiant Stadium. They said it was like a $14 million house or something. It's this giant, like, black and white space age thing with, like, the pool and jacuzzi area takes up the entire, like, forefront of this image. It's the kind of house you should have if you own an NFL team, frankly. Like, I own the Las Vegas Raiders. We play in Sin City in this giant new stadium. That's where I live.
That's my house.
That's exactly the house every NFL owner should have.
How many bedrooms is it?
Many bedrooms.
Tom Brady listed his house a couple years ago, and it was listed as like a three-bedroom or something.
I don't think it's the same as our three-bedroom.
It's like this castle with 900 rooms, but only three are declared bedrooms for some reason. It's like Brady not believing closets. Put a closet in every room. They're all called bedrooms, you know?
I don't think they are, if that's the kind of house you're building.
That's how it works. Where are we going next?
Who else sucks?
Did you say, you wanted to talk about Vikings and Purgatory, right?
Well, we can do that, but if we finish the teams that are terrible?
The Lions. Lions are in the, they're in the running for the top pick.
I can't find any information about the number of bedrooms. The permit application for the custom home will span 15,000 square feet and have a 5,400 square foot garage, which is significantly larger than my total house.
Yeah,
it's a good garage. It lists a valuation of $14 million.
Solid. It's a good market right now.
But yeah, it doesn't mention the number of bedrooms. I would assume it's quite a lot given the picture.
Seller's market. All right, Detroit Lions. What would you do with the Lions here?
I mean, I think in a weird way, Terry on the right track. And I honestly, I mean, I was making the joke at cutdown day, given the number of decent wide receivers that seem to be getting dumped, that the Lions could like claim an entire wide receiver core and probably upgrade what they had. They didn't, obviously. But I don't even know if they want to right now. Like, I don't, because they're halfway through this rebuild. They've deliberately focused all of the attention on the trenches and the secondary, and they've left essentially the sort of skill positions in the offense alone, and knowing that they're going to have to come back and attack this again. But given how quickly wide receivers hit the ground running now, you can almost expect these guys to be good immediately. So do you even want a halfway decent receiving core this year, knowing that next offseason you need as high a draft pick as possible to get the new quarterback, to get the new wide receiver? Like, I don't know that you want to mess with that and bring in a guy that could be better than, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't
Quintez
say.
Quintez Cephas.
I don't. Again, I think for these teams who are rebuilding, the players you're looking at right now should be players who are part of your future. So the phrase I used about the Texans, I don't see a lot of players on this team who are going to be there in 2023. If the Lions grab, say, Tim Patrick. I mean, he's going to be, you might have to pay him or whatever, but just throwing a name out there, right? Tim Patrick could be a Lions receiver 3 years from now. That is their number two or three option, right? So you would bring him in and evaluate him and see if he's one of those guys, right? I mean, those are the only guys that I would look at. I'm not trying to just get better than Quintez Cephas, like right. you're saying. I'm not just trying to make my roster a little bit better for this year. I'm trying to look, is this guy a potential Detroit Lion for my team in two years from now? And if he is, bring him in right now and let's evaluate him and see if he's a part of my rebuild. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, for the Lions, the best thing that could happen this season for them is that the offensive line gels, comes together, you know, as one good group. Like Penei Sewell, for example, doesn't completely stink. Jonah Jackson takes a step forward in year two. Just enough for you to be confident that the five guys you have are actually the five offensive linemen you want to go forward with. Doesn't matter if Jared Goff stinks. In fact, it probably helps you if he does, because you're going to be getting rid of him. The wide receiver group, it would be nice if Amon-Ra St. Brown showed that he was part of the future. Sure. The rest of them could all be sacrificial lambs. Doesn't really matter. And then critically, that the defense just starts moving in the right direction. The defensive secondary, you see signs of life from Jeffrey Okuda. The guys up front, Halim McNeil, Levi Onwuzurike, if those guys, they don't even need to be great year one because of the development curve of defensive linemen, but just enough for you to be happy that that's going to move in the right direction, because next offseason is going to be all about identifying your quarterback, giving him somebody to throw to.
Yeah, and I want to see Aaron Glenn's a new defensive coordinator. I want to see how he uses those defensive backs. Once again, the Lions coming from the Belichick tree, which as much man coverage as anybody in the league, and bad man coverage is bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you can't win. Bad zone, you can kind of like, you know, mitigate disaster a little bit. Bad man coverage, well, you get torched.
Yeah, bad zone is at least some high variance in there. Like even bad zone.
Right, there'll be a tip or a missed throw or something.
Or just like bad zone defensive backs can still, like they still have their eyes on the quarterback and can still read where the throw is going and intercept some passes.
Right.
Bad man coverage guys are just 6 yards behind the dude they're trying to cover and it's not helping. Like when the ball's in the air, you're already beat.
And I know the Lions tried to mix it up and do some other things last year, but either way, I want to know, where's Jeffrey Okuda potentially going to succeed? So I think that's a big thing this year, is figure out who fits into my defense going forward. And then it's the same thing. Does Trey Flowers become a commodity, even with a big contract? Does he become a guy that's going to add to my draft capital going forward? Who are those guys moving? There's not a ton, I don't think, of these veterans that they would be flipping. But, you know, see who's a part of the rebuild here in Detroit. But I like the idea that we've talked about a lot. They've started in the trenches. The next couple of years, you could focus a little bit more at on the secondary and at wide receiver.
They presumably are going, they're in a similar situation to the Eagles in terms of their quarterback is at the top of the draft somewhere. They remember having an extra first round pick. Okay, it's from the Rams, so it shouldn't be a high one, but it's something, right? It's more ammunition to try and potentially move
a little bit
if you need to.
Lions, Eagles, Texans.
Yeah, I mean, the Texans should have the number one overall pick. The Eagles will probably have a top 10 and multiple other firsts maybe to be able to move. The Lions could have a top 10 draft pick, but they only have one low first round pick in probability to try and move anywhere.
Yeah, and just to answer the question that we pose literally on every single show, in a world where there's 32, 35 starting quarterbacks, where are the advantages there? The advantages are in the elite quarterbacks or in the rookie contract quarterbacks. So you're hoping that some more of these college quarterbacks emerge, and that's what you're looking at. You know, Jared Goff is probably a bridge quarterback. I mean, you still want to see what he can bring to the table, but he's probably a bridge to whoever your next guy is starting next year.
Yeah.
Who else we got here? Did you put the Broncos on this list?
Yeah. To me? Well, the Broncos, they don't have a quarterback. How do you fix them? Where's your quarterback? Where are you getting it?
Going all in on Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, you can put them in the quarterback, or you can put them in the team purgatory category if you would prefer, but they need fixing.
I would say the Broncos have those. It's similar to what the Bears did this offseason, right? I mean, let's not forget where the Bears were just before the draft. We were like, oh my gosh, where can the Bears even go right now? They missed out on every top quarterback. They decided to just bring in Andy Dalton because they needed a starter. They needed somebody there. What are they going to do? And then they get into the draft and they maneuver and they go up and get Justin Fields. Now there's hope in Chicago. I mean, that's Denver's best play, right? So you start with elite quarterback. You start with, I'm going to go get Aaron Rodgers, or I'm going to talk Seattle into Russ or whatever it is next February and March. You're going to start there. Say, look, we got this foundation. We built this great roster. Come to Denver. Come compete with Patrick Mahomes for the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
That's your first choice. And then your second choice is, okay, again, draft capital needs to be built up. I mean, they also could have drafted Justin Fields too and had at least some hope that he was the guy. But I would say that's the other play, is you play the first round and figure out, can I get a first contract quarterback and take another shot at somebody?
And they're unlikely to be in as good a situation as any of these other teams. One, because they don't have the additional draft picks to play with, and two, because they're probably not going to be picking as high.
They're probably too good.
Probably. Even with the bad quarterback probably situation. Too
good. And we don't know what this first round quarterback situation is going to look like. That's going to make the NFL even crazier, by the way. If there were four or five first round quarterbacks again next year, there was just five this year. 2020, where you had Burrow and Herbert and Tua. 2019, you had Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins, who, you know, jury's still out on Daniel Jones technically, but you had Kyler. And then 2018 was the year you had three. I mean, that's just a lot of first contract quarterbacks entering the NFL over these last few seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had another year of 3 to 5.
But it feels like Denver are going to be chasing 3 through 5 based off. Like they're going to need one of those seasons where there are 3 and 3 to 5, and usually when there's that many, they just don't all go in the top 10. Like it's hard. I mean, even if they should, it feels like the NFL picks enough holes in four and five that they slide. You know, like Lamar Jackson fell to the bottom of the first round, and based off his college tape, you'd be like, yeah, that's harsh. But if they'd stuffed all of those guys in the top 5, it would have looked ridiculous. So you've got to pick holes in the ones that aren't, and they start to slide a little bit. So Lamar slid just now. Mac Jones and Justin Fields were the guys that got picked apart. Now, when I evaluated those 5 quarterbacks, I came away thinking, I like all 5 of these guys. And the concept that 5 of them would go in the first 6 picks wasn't crazy to me, but the NFL just doesn't like doing that. It's almost like they feel that if 3 have gone already, 4 or 5 can't be that good. So they slide.
It's Peyton, right? George Peyton?
Yeah.
When he came out and said, it's easier to find quarterbacks than it is corners right now, and everybody had to quote tweet dunk on him for that statement.
Franchise corners.
It's very important. Very important that everybody got their quote tweet dunk on George Payton's statement, which was probably somewhat which was context-free and all that stuff. Part of the point he was trying to make, I think, was that the hit rate on corners has been low compared to QBs, whether that matters or not. The thing we would continue to say is Patrick Surtain could be awesome. And even if he becomes Darrelle Revis, maybe that's an extreme. That's a very, very valuable part of your team. It's just the potential of a Justin. Even if you don't love Justin Fields from an evaluation standpoint, he moves the needle so much more than Patrick Surtain if you're wrong. You know, if you're wrong about Fields, because you could be wrong about Surtain, as safe as he feels. And it's just why taking shots at quarterback is the way to go. You just have to take those shots so that we're not having this conversation. Like, what's the future of the Broncos? They have Teddy Bridgewater. They have Drew Locke. And they've got this great receiving core. And everything's beautiful on defense potentially here with Fangio running the show.
My biggest problem with the Denver Broncos passing on a quarterback this first round was not passing in and of itself. It's that what's the plan? Like, Philadelphia passed on a quarterback, like traded out of the concept of taking a quarterback, and was very clear that their plan was next year, right? You trade out, you assemble draft picks, you toss the keys to Jalen Hurts, which is itself a bet, you know? It's a high payoff but low risk bet, right? We'll toss the keys to Jalen Hurts. We don't really think he's going to work out, but if he does, bingo. Now we've got 3 first round picks to spend everywhere else, and we're in great shape. So Philadelphia, you can look at it and say, well, you probably should have taken a quarterback. On the other hand, you didn't. I respect the idea that you don't think those quarterbacks were that good, and you have clearly focused somewhere else. The target is obvious where you're painted. With Denver, they did the same thing, and they took Patrick Surtain. They didn't take a quarterback, and now you're like, well, okay, well, what are you doing? Because right now, it's a quarterback competition between Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater, and you're not going to be in a position to draft a quarterback in the top five next year. Like, what is your quarterback plan? Everybody,
it should be you have the most attractive situation.
Yeah, which everybody assumed it was Aaron Rodgers this time, and that didn't materialize. So now you're just, was your plan genuinely, we think we can get Aaron Rodgers, and then that disappeared, and now we're just screwed? Or is the plan something else that just isn't obvious from the outside? That is my issue, is that Philadelphia, you can say, okay, they eschewed drafting a quarterback at the top of the draft and pivoted all the resources over here. Denver did it as well, but there's no back, like there's no alternative. They've just gone, no, we're just not taking a quarterback.
No, their plan though was, we're going to evaluate the quarterbacks, and we don't know how they would have evaluated Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, and Trey Lance because they were all off the board.
Yeah.
So there's a chance they were like, oh, we love these three guys. There are three first round quarterbacks, and we don't love Justin Fields, and we don't love Mac Jones. So they just stuck to their evaluations.
You see, this is where I think it's different though, is that I'm okay with that. I'm okay with looking at first round quarterbacks when you have a desperate need of a first round quarterback and saying, I don't think that these two are actually going to be good in the NFL, but only if you can tell me what the alternative is. So if you're Philadelphia and you look at this and you say, there are two franchise quarterbacks in this draft, it's Trevor Lawrence, it's Zach Wilson, the other three guys are going to bust because of various reasons, right? Fine. I disagree, but I'm okay with that interpretation as long as you can tell me what your alternative strategy is. If you have no alternative strategy, you have to take one on the basis that you might be wrong because there's no viable alternative. If you're Denver and you looked at this and you say, you know what, Justin Fields holds onto the ball too long and he locks into read number one too often and we just don't think it's going to work. Or Mac Jones, you know, there's no way Dad Bod gets it done. Okay, but at the moment, your alternative is Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Lock, and you are not going to be in position to draft one next year at the top of the first round, so you have to play the odds that you're wrong.
Yeah. You have to look, again, if every quarterback is in this middle tier, a lot of quarterbacks are in this middle tier, then you start to look at your first contract guys, your draftable, the guys you're going to have for 4 and 5 years on the cheap, and building that roster around them, even if they're not the perfect prospect. Justin Fields, Mac Jones, if they weren't the perfect prospect for you, it still probably would.
Virtually nobody is the perfect prospect, right? The three most perfect prospects in the last 25 years have been Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, and Trevor Lawrence. But the best quarterback in that time has been Patrick Mahomes, who went, 10, 11?
Take chances, man.
And people were, you know, concerned about his game. Like, the perfect prospect is not necessarily the one you want. The point is, we are still, as a collective, bad at identifying the next great quarterback. So it's okay to lean on your evaluation and say, I don't like this guy, as long as you can point me to where your alternative quarterback is. If you can't do that, you have to take him on the basis that you might have screwed up your evaluation.
So to wrap up the Broncos, I've got a nice roster. I'm going to continue to build my nice roster and attract the elites.
Where are you getting him? Who's your elite? Where's he coming from?
We're gonna create a rift between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. We're gonna throw some. So we're gonna throw. What we're gonna do
is, season's just gonna be like a PR campaign, like a propaganda system.
Yes, we're gonna plant some seeds to.
Okay.
We're gonna plant discourse. I mean,
Discord.
Discord, yeah. Obviously. Discord between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, more Aaron Rodgers stuff. Maybe Denver did that all last year.
All of them. Just go in.
Tom Brady in the box.
Just a whole campaign of disinformation.
Mahomes and the Chiefs. That's the real power move because you're in the AFC West.
Right.
Right? So
it's going to be pretty tricky to separate him from his $500 million contract.
Might be. But that's the plan if you're in Denver.
Okay.
Get ready, Sam. Fantasy football draft season is upon us, as we all know. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
It's time to put the PP back in PPR league. With the sponsors of today's show, it's Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming, just launched their new Performance Package 4.0. Don't neglect your balls. Like the Packers front office has been neglecting Aaron Rodgers. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for kickoff by going to manscaped.com with 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code PFF. This will help you tame your Troy Polamalu in your pants. Is what they tell me.
Wow.
Inside their Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the Lawnmower Trademark 4.0. It's the trimmer. Weed Whacker Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer. Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. The Crop Reviver Toner. My gosh. performance boxer briefs and a travel bag. I've done this before. I know I have all these things. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty sweet package of stuff that you get here. Performance Package 4.0 also includes the weed whacker, as we said. It's like having Derrick Henry run through those nose and ear hairs.
Okay.
This is how they tailored it. They always tailor it for the season, man.
That one fantasy football. That one felt a little forced. The other ones were top notch.
It feels more forced because we're on a football show. Derrick Henry
was struggling, I think.
All right, we'll skip that one next time.
Yeah.
Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code PFF at manscaped.com. If your significant other is nagging you about how much time you put into your fantasy football team, you might as well gift them with some beautiful balls with Manscaped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
You think that was part of the making Aaron Rodgers happy thing? Just like a Manscaped pack.
Manscaped?
Yeah.
I wonder if he wants the promo code.
They've been treating him bad. Maybe they could just give him the Manscaped package and everything's good.
It's just good to have our friends at Manscaped back here on the show.
I love that. That's the best read ever.
Do we have any other teams to fix here?
The Vikings. We haven't got to them yet.
So the Vikings. Purgatory.
The perfect purgatory team.
Explain their situation. Why are they in purgatory?
Because they're too good to ever get the top five draft pick that gets you the new quarterback that hits the reset button, right? Every time everybody is chasing the quarterback above the Matt Ryan inflection point. If you don't have one, you need a pathway to getting one. And the easiest pathway to getting one is the top of the draft. Doesn't mean you're going to, but that's where most of them come from. So if you are the Vikings, you need some pathway to either win a Super Bowl or to get to the top five of the draft to hit the reset button. And right now, Kirk Cousins locks them exactly between those two points at almost all times. There is virtually no conceivable scenario whereby the Vikings hit either end of those extremes.
Let's go back to draft night here. There were rumors that Rick Spielman wanted to go get Justin Fields, right?
Yeah.
What is the... Let's say the Vikings... What the Vikings actually did was take pick number 14, trade down to 23... accumulated a couple extra picks there, which turned into Christian Darrisaw, their tackle. Wyatt Davis, we've been touting this for a while. They maybe got a starting tackle and a guard, even though neither one's starting yet. Maybe got two starting offensive linemen, and then Kellen Mond, a backup quarterback, which always, as we keep saying, just take shots. And Kellen Mond, yeah, showed some flashes in the preseason. Who knows? We'll see. So throw that all out the window. You don't have that now. You trade up, you get Justin Fields. What would the future have looked like in Minnesota? Because you'd have Fields. Uh-huh. Chicago wouldn't.
Yes.
Your division rival. You'd still have Kirk Cousins. We'd be sitting here debating. We'd either be debating, when does Justin Fields start? It's Kirk Cousins' team. Kirk Cousins is, like, there's a chance Justin Fields is better than Andy Dalton this year, pretty clearly, right? Mm-hmm. For Justin Fields to be better than Kirk Cousins this year, I don't know if we're there yet. I don't know if that's the case. But then the Vikings could have just said, you know what? We're going all in on Justin Fields. He's our starter. Kirk Cousins becomes maybe an asset. You know, it's not easy to trade him with his contract and everything. But all these desperate teams that you're talking about, the Broncos, Washington, would they be interested in the Kirk Cousins market? Then you get back some of that draft capital that you lost from Justin Fields. Is that a real world we could have been in here for the Vikings? And is that the situation we're talking about to get out of this? Is at least getting a first contract quarterback in Justin Fields, and now you have the resources to fill in the many holes that your roster has developed over the last couple of years.
I mean, yeah, if they had actually got Justin Fields, that was a rare opportunity to hit that, to hit that reset button, to find a quarterback that could be a franchise, which is... It's what we talk about when we say that's Washington's plan right now, right? Is to essentially keep juggling or spinning plates with a random veteran quarterback that was good enough to keep them competitive until they stumble into that situation where you're not picking particularly high in the draft. You're somewhere in the middle of the first round, but something happens to cause one of those first round guys to slide. And all of a sudden you stumble into a Justin Fields or, you know, whoever it is that happens. It's what we talk about with when you have a ton of those first round quarterbacks, one of them almost invariably slides. So you end up lucking into a Lamar Jackson or a Justin Fields or whoever it is, because those guys who, you know, by talent and by rights probably should have gone in the top 10 somewhere, but didn't, that I get, yeah, that, I mean, that's one way out of purgatory, is essentially just to get lucky and have a quarterback slide to you that had no business being there when you were picking in the first round.
For perspective, Cousins, at he's 33 years old this year, 16.6% of the cap. He'll be 21 estimated for next year, 21% of the cap next year. His cap number goes from $31 million to $45 million next year. So as much as I'm painting this picture of, oh, yeah, just trade Cousins to Denver and to Washington, I mean, you're not.
No, I mean, you have to be.
Not necessarily there.
You have to. Well, it's not. What happens, though, is that if you are the Vikings, having that contract is a problem because the roster is not good enough for them to be, you know, winning Super Bowls with Kirk Cousins as their quarterback. A team like Denver, it might be different, though, when you say, well, that roster is actually championship caliber if the quarterback is good enough. Now, obviously, Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback that's good enough to take that to a championship, but it doesn't need to be that good. Like, yeah. What if the quarterback is Kirk Cousins? Is Kirk Cousins good enough to take the Denver roster to a Super Bowl? Like, that is a much more debatable question, which is essentially the situation that Minnesota was in when they signed him in the first place, right? They were coming off an NFC championship loss, and they thought that they had a Super Bowl caliber team sitting under them and just needed a slightly better quarterback to take them over the next step. Problem is, they got him, and then everything fell apart, and they've never had that situation again.
Right, so again, 2017, they're in the NFC Championship. The Vikings had been getting better and better and better every single year. They didn't have a ton of injuries that year, if I recall. They had from front to back, one of the most solid defenses in the league. Guys that had been playing together for a while. Zimmer at the helm there. You know, Zimmer's a good defensive coordinator. They could throw the ball. They could run it. Whatever. They were a good team. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the roster got worse because it was inevitable, the way they had built it up, and it's just so tough to maintain? Was it inevitable, or was it because of Cousins' contract over the last couple of years?
Both. I mean, I think the roster was inevitably going to take a step back, but what bringing on a Kirk Cousins contract does is dramatically reduce your margin for error. So you're constantly going to be put in challenging decisions, you know, cap-wise. Like, do we sign this guy for $10 million or do we let him walk and hope that we can get his replacement and not suffer a drop-off? And then you have to hit on a few cheaper moves, right? You have to have some kind of low-cost success stories to maintain that level. Otherwise, you just don't have the money to play with to get it done. Kirk Cousins, though, he's a really interesting case. If you look at PFF WAR over the last 3 years, Cousins is ninth in the NFL. Now, remember, like, four of those spots are going to be taken up by Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Patrick Mahomes, right? The best four quarterbacks in the NFL. So Kirk Cousins being nine, it's a pretty impressive place to be. It is, however, below the Matt Ryan inflection point. Matt Ryan is sixth in this league. Yeah. Now, if you limit it to two seasons, I'm sure Ryan Tannehill jumps Matt Ryan, but Cousins is like just below that line. And if that's the line everybody's shooting for, by definition, Cousins is not quite high enough to lean everything on him.
Honestly, if we go back, we should go play my analysis on what I thought the Kirk Cousins signing meant in 2018. It raised the ceiling for the Vikings. Not astronomically, but it raised the ceiling after they had a run of Case Keenum, career year Case Keenum. They had Sam Bradford, and they had a couple years of Teddy Bridgewater. Guys that took care of the ball and did a nice job and whatever. And Cousins was supposed to raise the ceiling by throwing the ball down the field a little bit more and being a little bit more aggressive, which he's not, but he's at least capable of doing those things. I think he has raised the ceiling, but to our point, everything else has gone down. And when we analyze the 3 years that he's been in Minnesota, if you say he's been QB 10 from a value standpoint, because Tannehill the last couple of years, you're right, would be above.
And if
let's
you
say
do
he's
it,
QB 10.
If you do it by PFF passing grade, he goes 210 because Josh Allen jumps up above him.
So Cousins is about QB 10. Going into that signing, he was probably QB, he was around 15. I would say his previous years with Washington had been pretty solid passing grade, but the stats were always a little bit inflated, and I think part of that is Cousins' style. QB 10 on a big contract, you know what that is? That's Matthew Stafford over the last 8 or 10 years.
Sure.
Stafford was always on that high end of the teens. If you put him in bucket, you know, he's QB between 9 and 20, 9 and 18, wherever you want to throw that cutoff. But when you're getting paid top five money, then it's less valuable.
Yeah.
You want to have QB10 on a rookie contract or QB15 on a rookie contract, which is more valuable than QB10 on a contract that's really going to hinder your ability to go out and get players.
Yeah, I mean, the Matt Ryan inflection point, I don't think is like a cutoff point for we should always – we want no part of this quarterback if he's below that line. But it's a line at which point you should not be giving a quarterback top of the market money.
That's it becomes risky. And honestly, Dak Prescott and Baker Mayfield are like right on that cusp.
Exactly.
I would lean toward paying them because I think they're better than the rest of the NFL landscape right now. I would lean toward paying them, but they are – it could be the Baker inflection point soon, the Dak inflection point. I mean, that might be
well. That I think is cutoff. That is the discussion for those guys: is are they above that line? Because if they're not, I don't think we should be paying them the money. Because all we do is repeat the Kirk Cousins situation with a slightly different contract, you know, structure. So instead of being like a 3-year fully guaranteed deal, we have a much longer deal that's got a ton more money attached to it. It's the same problem, which is that contract stresses our cap situation and our decision-making throughout the rest of the roster. And unless this guy is definitely better than this point, he's not going to make up for what we screw up. Like, essentially, the stress that he places on our decision-making ability, he is not capable of making up for if we get it wrong.
I have one more important question to ask about this. But first, don't forget, the NFL's back and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving all new players a can't-miss offer for week one. You bet just $1 on any NFL game during the first week of the season and receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. Take advantage of this limited-time offer now. You heard it right. It's DraftKings giving all new players $200 in free bets instantly when you place a bet of just $1 or more on any week one game. Head to DraftKings Sportsbook app now and check out all the great promotions and daily odds boosts. Plus, you can make every game a big game with same-game parlays. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code PFF to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any Week 1 game. That's promo code PFF to get your free $200 in free bets instantly for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. The question I was going to ask about the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
What is the goal for an organization? I've brought this up before, and I forget the name of the guy that Kev Cole had on his podcast recently who said organizations need to set a clear goal. Is it to win a championship? Or is it to just make the playoffs? Is it to be good? Did the Vikings make the... We seem, sitting in these seats, to think championship, right? Do whatever you can to win a Super Bowl. But if it was my job, and I knew I'd have some job security for 4, 5, 10 years just by making the playoffs a lot, the Marcus Mariotas of the world, the Kirk Cousins of the world, seem pretty attractive. Was that part of the decision for the Vikings? Did they make a championship decision or did they make a get it on the green decision, even though it might be a 100-foot putt?
I think most teams, I think there are very few teams for whom the goal is just to be competitive, at least not long term. There might there might be teams who are building something for whom the short term goal is playoffs, right? It's a step. It's a step along the way, but ultimately where we want to go is championship. I'm not sure there are any teams for whom if you go to a different sport, right? Soccer, Arsenal for years were not really trying to win the Premiership. They were just trying to make the Champions League, the top four spots, because that's where the money got unlocked. If you make the Champions League, you get the giant bonus sum of cash, and that sets you up, because what Arsenal were trying to do was finance the new stadium, and that took money. So all you needed to do was to keep hitting the green, keep getting it into the Champions League year after year after year, because that's where all the money is, and that's what keeps the stadium ticking over. And when we get that built, we get the giant sums of money, and now we can compete for the real thing. So, but they, for a while, they weren't going to turn it down if they stumbled into the Premier League title, but they weren't really chasing for it the same way the other teams were. I don't know that there's anybody trying to do that in the NFL for more than a year, right? For more than just, this is a stepping stone this year. We're not good enough to win, but we can get to the playoffs and we can build. But what I think the problem is that there are way too many teams that aren't able to accurately identify how good they are. So I think there's a lot of teams that are like, oh, our goal this year is to win the Super Bowl. You're like, but you know that that's not possible. Like, you are not even in the realm of possibilities of winning a Super Bowl. And I think there are too many teams that look at this and you go, the same thing we've been talking about of fans in the offseason, right? If these 78 things all go our way and none of the good things from last year change, well, we're in the Super Bowl. We beat Kansas City. It's easy. I think that's the way a lot of teams look at this. It's all about how this team could win a Super Bowl, as opposed to what is the most likely set of outcomes for your franchise this season? Because that should be dictating what your future plan is. And what, like, because ultimately the goal should be winning a Super Bowl. But in order to get there, you have to have an accurate representation of where you are now. Otherwise, you don't know how to, like, you don't know what steps to take to make a Super Bowl. So the Vikings, I think, are a good example, right? Are the Vikings capable of winning a Super Bowl this year? I would say no. So if that is true, they need to build for 2022 and 2023. And if that is the case, should you be handing Harrison Smith a contract that makes him one of the highest paid safeties in the NFL? No.
In his 30s.
Right.
And that is
33.
That's part of this discussion here too, is I think they've made good moves. I go back to my Texans analysis, right? I said draft 14 or 15 times a year. Ultimately, you know, draft 40 players in 3 years. The Vikings drafted, what, 15 2 years ago? This last year it was 11, I think it was. I mean, that is a good rebuilding strategy. And if you pull out 8 players, 9 players in back-to-back drafts, that's really good. Your hit rate doesn't have to be good for you to do that. And it's a great way to rebuild. So they're doing those things. But also paying Kirk Cousins and Harrison Smith a huge chunk of the salary cap.
And the Vikings also seem to be locked in purgatory because they're just good enough at a lot of things to keep this level going, right? They have a reasonable hit rate in certain areas. They make a lot of smart moves, and then as you say, they sort of undermine them all with one or two moves. But I think the root cause of it is that sort of self-delusion of how good you're going to be. Like, you need to have an accurate picture. I mean, teams self-scout, right? That's one of the things you do over the course of a season, because it's important to have an accurate idea of how things are going. If you just, like, put your head in the sand and go, it doesn't really matter if we know how well our safety has been playing, we'll just keep going and assume it'll be good. You know, we could just keep telling him the things to do, he'll be good. But if you don't have any idea how that guy's been performing, you don't know what to address. This is the same problem on a team building level, that if you don't have this accurate picture of, look, we're really not in the Super Bowl picture this year, like, many things would need to break in our direction for us to even be in the conversation, then how can you accurately build, how can you get there next year?
As of right now, Harrison Smith and Kirk Cousins will make up about 22% of the salary cap.
Two players, one of whom is a safety.
Next year. I'm sorry, no. In 2022, I'm off. It's like 28% of the salary cap.
Right.
Will be Kirk Cousins and Harrison Smith. Both players will be 34 next year.
33 for
Harrison Smith, sorry.
He's February.
It's close enough. Harrison Smith making $17 million in 2023, $17 million in 2024, and $20 million in 2025 when he's 36.
Like, that's a move you make if you are the Bucks, right? And you have a championship roster. You expect to get back to the Super Bowl this year, and you don't want to rock the boat by, like, losing a player.
You overpay in the future for now.
You just don't want to rock the boat by risking what happens if Harrison Smith isn't there.
And we love Harrison Smith.
He's great. He's been awesome. The best safety of his generation. Like, the best complete safety of his generation for like a decade. He's a great, great player. But he's now 32 years old. He's a few months away from being 33. And his team is not in the Super Bowl picture right now. So is it a smart thing to hand him that contract? It's very difficult to argue that it is.
I just want to back up one more time, because we started podcasting. When did we first ever start podcasting? Like 2012?
Sure.
It was just kind of thrown together.
Yeah.
Because I remember discussing, it was me, you, and David Tuckman. Great David Tuckman, right?
Tuck.
We would discuss this all the time, because we were coming off of Joe Flacco made a Super Bowl run and Eli Manning just made 2 in 5 years. And there was this feeling that you just need a top 15 quarterback. Just get top 15 and anybody can go on a run. Anybody can get hot for 4 games.
Yeah.
And I do think people are still building their team with that in mind, which is Kirk Cousins is a top 15 quarterback. You just get us into the playoffs, you can go on that run. But since that point, and I don't know how much you weigh this or shouldn't weigh this, the quarterbacks who have been in the Super Bowl are Peyton Manning, Tom Brady every other year, right? Peyton Manning has been there a couple times, even when he was bad. Russ has been there a couple times. Patrick Mahomes has been there a couple times. It's elite quarterbacks. Matt Ryan, the inflection point, has been there a couple times. The other quarterbacks that have been there are all rookie contract quarterbacks. So I don't know how much we overrate. We should overrate. So Kaepernick was there 1 year, rookie contract. Russ was on his rookie contract in his back-to-back years. Cam was just finishing up, so he may have just gotten paid, right, in 2015. Philadelphia really had a rookie contract quarterback in Carson Wentz. The Rams had Goff. And then the Niners, they're the one other outlier with Jimmy Garoppolo. They had paid him, and they made it. So my point is, most of the quarterbacks who make the Super Bowl are either elite quarterbacks or rookie contract quarterbacks over the last 10 years. And if you go back to 2001, like that holds true pretty strong as well.
I mean, I think it's probably still true that those guys can go on a run. It's just, is that likely? I mean, what you have to essentially weigh up is what is more likely, a overpaid, decent quarterback going on a career run and winning a Super Bowl, or you being able to put a really, really good team around a rookie because of the contract. And I think the data is saying it's easier to put a much better team around a rookie quarterback, particularly if the rookie ends up better, you know, because the rookie could be the same as the average, as the good quarterback on the giant money in terms of quality, right? In Russell Wilson's case, he was probably better. And you have all the money to spend. So it's way easier. But even if he's worse, it's like, which is more likely to happen, the really good team elevating the rookie or the reasonable quarterback elevating everybody else or going on a freaky run. Now, Nick Foles did it. Like, it's still possible for that guy to go on a ridiculous run.
Yeah, Nick Foles went on a run. They built a good team in part because they had the rookie contract quarterback, though, too.
Yeah, and he wasn't on a huge amount of money, so it wasn't. But the point is, like, that kind of quarterback can still go on a freaky run.
Sure.
Which is what you're banking on. But again, it's playing the odds. Like, if your chances... If the whole thing is relying on this one guy that's never really done it before going on a crazy career run, I mean, that's just not smart betting.
But I keep coming back to some teams and some general managers are happy being a 9-7, 10-7 team. Right?
I think
9-8
owners are. I'm not sure teams, I'm not sure general managers and coaches are, again, beyond like the 1 year thing, right? Like if you were on the hot seat and you come out with a 9-7 season.
And you make the playoffs and everything.
Yeah, like that's a good year, right? We can now move on. But you're not like, if I just keep ticking over at 9-7 here, I'm never getting fired and I can put the kids through college and everything's good.
It's not the worst strategy in the world, because if your floor is high and you are getting into the playoffs, and not only, it's not just job security, it's giving the Cousins player, type of player, a chance to go on that run. There's a chance, it might be low percentage, but you're in that playoff run every year. So, do you think the Bengals were happy with making the playoffs every year? And they lost first round every year, but they kept making the playoffs. Like, did Marvin Lewis do a good job?
So
I could see Mike Brown. Yeah, heck yeah, let's do that. Let's make the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying. Again, I think ownership was happy. I don't know that. Like, I don't think Marvin was happy with that. I think the owner was perfectly happy with that.
But now, you could
it's
honestly
complicated
look at,
by the fact that in that it's one of the few situations where the owner is also the GM. You know what I mean? Like that's even more complicated.
Right. But you could probably look at what Marvin did there and say he did a good job there. Because he did I think he probably.
But I don't think he was happy coming away every year of being like, if I just get to the playoffs and get my ass kicked.
No, of course.
One,
I mean, you're not happy. People in Cincinnati, we're not very happy here. At some point, they're like, Marvin's got to go. He can't get us over the hump. Well, you're not even close to the hump anymore. You know, you can't get over it if you're not even close to it. At least you're trying to.
You can no longer see the hump.
Can't see the hump. Maybe this year.
So if you're Minnesota, right, the last time they had a record worse than 7 wins was 2013. How are you hitting the reset button? Is that your plan to just like keep bumbling along until you stumble into a Justin Fields?
I probably would have made the Fields move. Here's what I would really do. I'm not in the seat. I think Kirk Cousins is a solid quarterback who by every number, and forget his stupid fourth quarter grade last year, he had a couple good games, but he was very inflated by garbage time there. He is protected by play action.
Dude's going to get mad again.
What? Who?
I don't know, the one guy that says you're wrong about that?
I don't even care. Cousins, he grades pretty well. He is not a carry the team type of guy.
He's a below the Matt Ryan inflection point.
But I would try to play that variance that Cousins could be better than that. And instead of protecting him and trying to run the ball all this time, I'd run play action, sure, all that stuff. I would get a third receiver. I mean, I would say, I'm the Minnesota Vikings. I'm going to try to win with Kirk Cousins. I'm not doing this two tight end, run the ball type of thing. I'm getting a third receiver or a third legitimate playmaker. I would, the same thing I would do with every other team. I'd build the receiving core the way the Bills did and said there are going to be games where Kirk Cousins is going to chuck it around and it might get ugly sometimes, but we're going to be better off for it. So I would have attacked the playmaker situation and said I'm not happy with just Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. I want a third guy there. And I want a tight end, and I want defenses to say, I don't know how to cover this. Plus, oh, by the way, Dalvin's coming out of the backfield. And I would spread to run instead of condensing to run play action. I'd spread to run, spread, run the play action game, and try to put the ball in Kirk's hands as a passer. So as much as I'm saying, I don't think he's the guy that's going to carry the team, I would try to hit that high end of the variance with Cousins and try to score 30 points a game.
And they have the money to do that even now. They've got like $9 million worth of cap space. That's enough to get you a good slot receiver.
So what if they had, say, Michael Gallup? So if they had Dallas's situation, if Dallas actually does want to trade Michael Gallup and you trade for Michael Gallup, and now it's Gallup, Justin Jefferson, and Adam Thielen, I am so much more excited about the Vikings.
Sure.
With that trio of receivers plus Dalvin out of the backfield, you could protect your offensive line with three dudes getting open quickly. The Irv Smith thing hurts because he could have been a really nice pass game option, top eight, probably receiving tight end in the NFL. That hurts. But you still have to protect the line. And you can protect the line by getting rid of the ball quickly and spreading it around. If they had a legitimate third receiver and then they spread to run and spread to just, you know, lighten the box and open up passing lanes, I'd be all for that, man.
I mean, it makes them better. I don't think it takes them out of purgatory. I think emerging from purgatory for the Vikings has to start with moving on from Kirk Cousins.
Okay, so that's how I would maximize the Kirk Cousins experience. How I would get out of purgatory is I would, next time the Justin Fields opportunity comes up, I take it. You know, next time you have an opportunity to go get a first-round quarterback, you have to take it.
Is it worth, yes, if you have an opportunity, if you get lucky enough that one of those guys slides to you, you just take him and figure out what that looks like later. Is it worth moving on from Kirk Cousins before you have the obvious succession plan? Because it almost generates itself, right? It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Not for my job security, but it.
Right.
If the goal is to get out of this.
But you have to like.
Yeah, you move on.
You have to kind of, you have to make that case as part of the thing, right?
But they
you have
double to go down to, instead.
Yeah. Well, I can't help that. But like if you're in charge, if you're Spielman, you have to go to ownership. You have to hope that they don't make that point, which is you re-upped him this time. So let's assume they're not going to. You have to say, look, we are in purgatory right now. The quarterback we have is below the Matt Ryan inflection point. We need out, and we're not going to get out with this guy, so I'm going to get rid of him. And in order to get, and after getting rid of him, we may have a really bad year. Really bad. But that's a good thing, because that really bad year is going to put us in the top five, and that's where we get our succession plan. So just have patience with me. You're going to have to suffer through a stinky year, but that's going to get us out. That's going to get us over the hump.
I think,
and then you have to hope he doesn't go, but you re-upped him for the second contract. This is all your fault.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad idea. I mean, the other way you'd position it too is like, well, Aaron Rodgers is leaving the division, you know, right? That's the other thing too. I really think if you are analyzing your competition, if you're the Carolina Panthers right now, Tom Brady's 44. He might play one more year. It's like, okay, let's be good in 22 and 23. That's our chance, right? We're not going to win this year with the Bucs and the Saints are still better than us. But Drew Brees just retired and Brady's going to leave at some point, right? And Matt Ryan's getting worse. Our chance, Panthers, is next year and the year after. We're going to start to get good there. That's what they should be thinking about. If you're in the NFC North, it's like, all right, let's, the post-Aaron Rodgers world is going to open things up for us. Just like all the AFC East teams, the Bills were in perfect position to pounce once the Patriots roster fell apart, plus Brady moved on. They were ready. So that's what you should be planning for.
And that's why part of this, I mean, it might be part of the Chicago Bears strategy to listen. We don't need to rush Justin Fields out there because this year is not important. Next year is the important one.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. So yeah, Vikings fixed. I think there's a I mean, the idea of getting to tank world for Minnesota, I don't think it's likely, but it'd be interesting.
I just, you need to move on from Kirk Cousins. However that manifests itself, it needs to happen. And I think it's easier to find the next quarterback, obviously, if you're picking top five than it is if you're picking 15 to 20.
And just to be clear, where Cousins ranks as a quarterback, there are other teams who would benefit from him.
I mean, if Cousins would cut tomorrow, the Denver Broncos would sign him yesterday. Like, he would, again, whatever about the controversy of saying Cam Newton would be the best quarterback on the Denver roster, like, Cousins is like a monster upgrade over anything Denver. Yeah. Like, Washington, he's an upgrade over Fitzpatrick, who I've been saying is a monster upgrade over what they had last year. Cousins is a quarterback that would materially change the chances of several teams in the NFL and probably put them into contender status that aren't currently there. But the Vikings don't have a team around him that he makes that difference to.
Anybody else you want to talk about here?
That's what I was going to ask. Who's the next? Who's still in purgatory? Who else is in purgatory?
Who is still in purgatory? I don't think Arizona is.
I mean,
going alphabetically.
Is Atlanta in purgatory with the Matt Ryan inflection point?
I mean, Matt Ryan's getting a little bit worse.
Yeah.
At this point.
So Matt Ryan himself has been above and below the Matt Ryan inflection point just throughout the course of his career.
Yeah. I think the problem there is that roster minus Matt Ryan
is dead in the water.
They need some work.
To put it mildly.
They need some work. So they're not a great roster. So you're trying to rebuild. I mean, it's very much like a Minnesota situation, right? It is a situation where they were close. They had a great roster a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It slowly fell apart.
Yep.
Matt Ryan remains there.
And now you've kind of blown it apart, except Matt Ryan's still there.
But he's still there, and he's there for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Atlanta's in a tough spot.
I'll give you one. The Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
Now, they might be even in a slightly better situation than the Vikings with Kirk Cousins. Their problem is not like throwing money in ill-advised places. Their problem is like trying to draft smarter than everybody else and just missing.
I'm trying to separate the head coach, so John Gruden, the head coach, from what they do on their side of the ball. This happened like with Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly came in and had a really efficient offense for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
If you look at Chip Kelly's body of work as an offense, just assuming all the offense credit goes to him or whatever, you could say he got a ridiculous year out of Nick Foles. He got a career year out of Mark Sanchez. Boston almost came out of me for a second there. Mark Sanchez. And they did a lot of really good things. Where Chip ended up falling down is some of the personnel decisions. Gruden, you can make the argument that the Raiders had one of the most efficient offenses last year. And if you looked at it on paper, they had an offensive line that got hurt and fell apart. Nelson Aguilar became a star. Yeah. Henry Ruggs disappointed.
Their biggest problem right now is personnel.
All I'm saying is they've done such a good job on the offensive side of the ball, making it better and better and better, which is, if we were saying, what would you rather? You would rather that. But the defense is just so far behind the offense. That is what has been lacking. Can they win with Derek Carr? I don't know that we've even had a fair opportunity,
right?
Because they haven't had a balanced team.
They're a different situation where their reason for being in purgatory is not necessarily the quarterback, which it is for most teams. Their reason for being there is that they've whiffed on pretty much every first round draft pick they've had over the last X number of years. Now, some of them are still open question marks, obviously, because it takes a while for you to fully appreciate what a first round pick is capable of. It's not always year one. But they're up against it. I've liked what I've seen from Alex Leatherwood so far, at least in terms of when he's blocking the right guy, he blocks him well.
Now, there's a couple blown assignments in there, but overall he's been all right.
I think that's an encouraging thing generally. I think I would prefer seeing that than him just getting whooped. Is that fair? Is it reasonable to expect that the mental mistakes will disappear and that it's a good thing that when he blocks the right dude, he blocks him pretty well? So Alex Leatherwood might be the first time where they've like gone, you know what, screw your consensus. We're going off the board and drafting this guy, and it's gone well. I guess you could point to Colton Miller as a case of that, even if that took a while.
My only issue with that, as far as getting excited about the Raiders, is if they just brought back Trent Brown and Trent Brown was healthy, Leatherwood even an upgrade over Trent Brown?
Right.
And I don't think that's the case.
But anyway, my point is like that's one that might be okay. Henry Ruggs was a disaster last year. I don't think it was his fault.
He'll be fine.
But he's now up against it to show that he can be that guy, particularly as they released John Brown because he wanted out. So now there isn't a contingency plan. Like, we were lauding the Raiders in the offseason for, hey, signing John Brown was really smart because if Ruggs doesn't pan out, you have an immediate, obvious backup. You have an insurance policy in John Brown who's really good at that kind of stuff. Well, you don't anymore. You got rid of him because you wanted out the door. So now you have to be right about Henry Ruggs because there isn't an alternative. Arnett looks terrible. Cleveland Furl, that first round didn't go well. Like, this has not been good for the Raiders. So consequently, they don't have a roster that can compete with the likes of Kansas City, who have an elite quarterback, probably not with the Chargers, who might have an elite quarterback, and with Denver, who just have a better roster top to bottom. So all of a sudden, despite having a quarterback that should be good, the Raiders might be the worst team in the division.
They set the analytics community back by making a good process move in the Khalil Mack trade. And then missing on every pick and not being able to capitalize on it. And people saying, see, always keep your superstars. When it's not, I say this all the time, but it's not a superstar-driven game at non-quarterback positions. The process of trading Khalil Mack for essentially four players, theoretically, is a good one.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not just those four players. It's also, you could take those picks, you could flip those four players into 10 players. You literally could turn Khalil Mack into 10 players. If you wanted. It was those options are available, which is why the process is good. But if you then draft bad players with those picks, then it just doesn't end up working out.
Which is, I mean, that is a relevant part of the discussion when you're talking about those moves, right? It isn't, I don't think it's as simple as, so it's a little bit like the fourth down decisions, right? Where there were a bunch of people set those first down decisions back years because you go for it when you're supposed to, you don't get it. And it's like, idiot. You see, I would have been able to tell you that based off how your center had been playing that game.
Right.
You got to go with the feels. You should have felt that it wasn't going to work this time and not made that stupid call. Whereas in reality, you just play the percentages and that's how, you know, you end up better. That's how you steal edge. That's how you steal an edge. That's why a team like Baltimore is consistently better in those situations than other teams. I don't think this is quite the same because you have to factor in what could happen. Like, you have to factor in the strike rate of player talent acquisition. So you have to at least factor in the possibility that when we turn all these players or when we turn this one guy into all these picks, we're going to end up with nothing. Now, I'm not saying it isn't still worth doing because the strike rate might be high enough that you still end up better. But it has to at least factor in that we could take this one, you know, bird in the hand and turn it into nothing.
Sure. The odds were still in their favor. Like, if they took that Cleveland Furl pick and traded down and picked up an extra second and then, you know, hitting on your second rounder versus your top 15 pick is, you know, pretty close to the same odds and all that stuff. And there were just a lot of potential options there. The problem is they just have not replenished on defense at all.
So what's their path out of purgatory?
Draft a million defensive players. Keep trying. You got to keep trying.
Maybe bring in some consultancy for the draft.
The other part is flipping Derek Carr and upgrading a quarterback. So Carr might not have the same, let me see where his cap percentage is. He's not the same contract situation as Cousins, as you said, but we're talking, he's 11% this year, 9.5% next year. That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
He is, interestingly enough, one spot below Kirk Cousins in the war over the last 3 years. They're basically the same human.
So I use the Stafford example because over the last decade, Stafford is probably QB 10 or 11. That's where Cousins and Carr are. I think Cousins and Carr's standing in today's NFL has been elevated by Big Ben getting old, Phillip Rivers retiring, Drew Brees retiring, and Andrew Luck retiring, right? Those guys are more valuable quarterbacks now than they were 3 or 4 years ago when they were better quarterbacks in the NFL. So they're on the high end of this middle tier, Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins. So now, but Derek Carr is not a rookie contract quarterback, and he's not an elite quarterback. So that's the other way out of this, right? Is when the Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers stuff happens. Okay, that's a game changer. That's an absolute game changer, and you have to continue to put resources into your defense if you're the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, their path out of it is to just draft better, which is obviously a thing everybody would love to do. But the Raiders have been so bad doing it that that's their problem. And there's no obvious, like, there isn't a roadmap to that. You just have to stop making picks that are so...
We would say that the odds are in your favor, right? If you're drafting poorly, you'll creep back toward average here.
Yeah, but they're not just drafting poorly, they're drafting differently, which I think is part of the issue. Like, okay, again, I'm okay with you trusting your board versus other people's. Now, you still should be maximizing value in terms of recognizing when you differ dramatically from somebody else and trading back to maximize what you can get for that. But it's okay to say, look, we view this completely differently. We trust our own guys, so we're going to go with this way. But if you've been doing that for a lot of years now and it hasn't been going well, you have to evaluate the process and say, is this the best way to be doing this? Should we, in fact, be factoring in the consensus board more than we currently are and potentially modifying some of our takes?
I think the other part of the Raiders issue for me is the whack-a-mole nature of fixing spots on the roster this offseason. So if they just rolled last year's offensive line into this year, yeah, they'd be a little bit older and they'd be a little bit more expensive, but I'd feel better about them than with Andre James and Denzel Good being, you know, starters on this line. And we still don't know exactly what we'll get from Leatherwood. So they took this offensive line, which if they rolled it back, wouldn't have necessarily been a weakness, even though it was last year because of injuries. And they spent a lot of resources there when other parts of the roster started to fall apart. This is what happened with the Falcons for a few years. Yeah. They had to start fixing things that had been strengths, and then other things became weaknesses. And they were not able to maintain it. Whatever the Browns are doing, which is the opposite of that, which is taking every weakness and turning it into at least an average unit, if not a strength, however the Browns are doing it is the way to do it. So you look up and down the roster and say, okay, we don't have weaknesses here.
But I think that's just an inevitability when you haven't been drafting well. Is you
yeah,
just
it
end
catches
up.
Up.
You just
it
end up behind up the eight ball and you're trying to catch up more than you're trying to, you know, be good to begin with.
Man, I love these discussions. They're fun, man.
Derek Carr, yeah, again, like PFF grade, exactly the same. He is one spot behind Kirk Cousins over the last 2 years, a mark of 88.3 versus 89.5 for Kirk Cousins. What's really fascinating, though, is this the Brown situation and Baker Mayfield. Because, again, three quarterbacks in a row, Mayfield, Cousins, Derek Carr. In terms of the last couple of years, PFF war, PFF grade, the Browns are staring right into a decision that says Baker Mayfield is just below the Matt Ryan inflection point. He is now Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr are probably the top two below the Matt Ryan inflection point. The question they have to ask themselves is, can his development in 2021, which we expect to happen, we expect him to have a career year this year, can that propel him above that line?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think being...
If not, they shouldn't sign him.
But if you have a player playing at Matt Ryan-ish level in their first 3 years in the league, that is different than Cousins in years 5, 6, and 7.
Well, only
Carr
if he continues
five,
to get better.
Seven. Yes, but just like, so I, again, I always use the Madden analogy, you don't get better every year. But I do think if you put together 3 or 4 years of good, solid play, then you trust that baseline that you're going to be in that borderline second tier of quarterback. I think you have a chance to be in that second tier of quarterback. That was Deshaun Watson after his first 4 years. He never played elite football until his fourth year, right? That's Dak. I think Dak was solid enough that, okay, I feel like he's a tier two quarterback. I think Baker's a tier two quarterback. So yeah, the middle of Baker's career.
But now we're shooting for tier one quarterbacks.
Yeah, but I still think the tier two quarterback is a valuable place. It's Matt Ryan plus, and it's wide open in these next 10 years in the NFL. And I think Baker has a chance to be in that position. I think Herbert has a chance to be. Josh Allen could be tier two or tier one. Lamar could be tier two or tier one. There's a lot of players vying for that tier two spot, which is top eight quarterback in the NFL.
See, I think the guaranteed tier two quarterback is a dangerous thing and is potentially the starting point down the road to purgatory?
I don't know.
If you have a quarterback that you don't think will ever be better than tier two, that is a very dangerous thing. Because now what you're saying is, in order for this guy to win a championship, everything around him has to be good, which is exactly what happens with the Kirk Cousins thing. You now need to be really good at assembling, either assembling or maintaining.
Not as good as if you have a tier three.
I mean, a tier three quarterback is fine because you're never staying with those guys. You're moving on. Now, what you have, there's the chance that you not just settle for a tier two quarterback, but pay that guy a boatload of money, which now puts you in this situation of either being incredibly difficult to assemble or maintain a championship caliber roster.
Let me define this for a second, though. The tier two quarterback, I think, over the last decade is Big Ben, Philip Rivers, Andrew Luck. Russ was a tier two quarterback for the majority of his career. Matt Ryan. And who am I missing here? There's probably one other. I think there's one other guy. And they all played. Who am I missing? And they all played in the same era as a clear top four with Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, and Peyton Manning until he got hurt, right? I'm saying in the next 10 years, that top tier might only be Mahomes. It might only be Patrick Mahomes. Maybe Russ, maybe Josh Allen gets in there, but it might not be this clear four. And I'm talking, it was four quarterbacks who just dominated from start to finish. Some peaks and valleys, but they dominated. We might not have that. We might only have one quarterback. So then the tier two quarterback, it might be eight guys. It might be eight guys in that group. But now you're talking, you're not working from behind as much as you were over this last decade.
But the important thing is that in any given year, your quarterback can be a tier one guy. So Josh Allen might be overall a tier two quarterback
for his career.
Of course,
you can move up.
But we've already seen that he's capable of a tier one season. If Baker Mayfield or Dak Prescott or Kirk Cousins or Derek Carr, if those guys are not capable of a tier one season, and by that I mean a PFF grade above 90, right? As opposed to, you know, has a 5,000 yard, 40 touchdown, like a box score tier one season. I don't care what the production is like. I care how much that guy on a throw for throw basis is actually...
He's the catalyst for this thing.
Yeah. As opposed to just the guy reaping the rewards of the offense's production. If the quarterback is not capable of a tier one season, I think you are in a very dangerous situation if you pay him tier one money, because that automatically hamstrings you from doing a bunch of other things. At least with Josh Allen, you know that he's capable of having a year where he elevates everything around him. And okay, even if he does make it more challenging to maintain a really good roster around him, we know that that season is there and he can overcome a lot of stuff if the thing is eroded around him and he has that season, we're still in really good shape. That isn't on the table with the other guys. All you're doing is making their situations worse.
So you want a tier two quarterback who's capable.
I want a tier one quarterback. If I can't have a tier one quarterback, I want a tier two quarterback that's capable of tier one seasons. If I know, or I'm pretty sure, that my tier two quarterback is only capable of tier two seasons, I want to cut bait and move on.
Yeah, I just think we're going to be entering this world over the next 10 years where we'll have a lot of different types of Super Bowl. Tom Brady's not going to keep winning every Super Bowl. So we'll have different types of Super Bowl winners, and it might change the narrative a little bit. And again, I mentioned this before. I mean, you're going to have Baker's going to, you know, win one, and Lamar is going to win. Like, all these different types of quarterbacks are going to win one. And it might just be back to this whole, like, have a top 12 guy and you can be in the mix.
I mean, the other
or Mahomes and the Chiefs dominate.
The other thing that complicates it is time scales, right? And the concept of going all in for one. Like, how important is being a Super Bowl challenger every year versus giving you the best possible opportunity to win one, right? So if you're, I mean, the
I would ask the fan, like, as a fan, ask the fans right now, ask everybody in the YouTube chat, would you rather make the playoffs five straight years and not win a Super Bowl, or win one Super Bowl and not make the playoffs for 4 years?
I'm not even necessarily just because I don't think that's what you're shooting for, but what, like, if you're the Patriots, or not, so the Vikings, right? The Vikings have never won a Super Bowl, so their goal is just to get one. But in order to get one, you might do things that don't set you up to be good every year. So the Browns are a good example now, because right now the Browns are as good as they've ever been for decades since they came back, certainly. They are potentially the favorites for their division. They are a team that on paper should be right up there with the Chiefs, the Bucks, the Bills, the top teams in the NFL. But they're now staring into this Baker Mayfield contract. And if Baker Mayfield doesn't play dramatically better this year, you're in this spot where you say, well, we probably shouldn't pay him long term. We shouldn't give him the Dak Prescott contract, because it's going to make life harder to keep a team around him. But paying him probably does give you a better chance of winning a Super Bowl in the next 2 years. So which is more important? Maintaining a long-term outlook of saying, this is how we keep a really good team, or this is how we get the best chance of having a good team for the next 10 years, or saying paying Baker Mayfield a $250 million contract is what gives us the best shot of winning a championship in the next two seasons.
Oh man, it's a really tough one. It's
because
really
those are like one. Real issues.
I'll
like,
tell you
there
what,
might be teams that are like teams have done this before, right? Gone all in for 1 year, knowing that it will torpedo several years in the future, because it's more important. No. Getting a Super Bowl ring validates everything. On the other hand, there are teams like the Patriots for whom one Super Bowl ring, I mean, it's fine, but where are the next five coming from?
The Patriots are going to be fascinating, because now they have. I still think they're going to be. They're not going to love their cap situation a year from now with all their free agent signings, but they have a rookie contract quarterback now to build around. So Belichick, they don't have to be, you know, cheap as they have been in the past. For whatever you say about Brady saving the money, they were still a thrifty team as far as how they spread their resources.
But they
don't have to be now.
They generally didn't ever go all in until, you know, reportedly those last couple of years with Brady, which led them to the situation of cap hell and blah, blah, blah. But like that's a factor as well, right? You can't just look at this in isolation and say, you know, the data says if you're below the Matt Ryan inflection line, we shouldn't pay you money, because then there's a real counterpoint that says, but we want to win a ring now. Like this team is capable of winning one this year or next year, and we don't actually care if it makes life more challenging in 4 years' time, because we'll have our rings.
And that's why the Stafford thing is fascinating too, because he is not, in my world, he's not a tier two quarterback. Never has been. He is, for production-wise, Cousins and Carr and these guys we've been listing, right? The high end of tier three, which also includes, by the way, Cam Newton. I think Cam Newton was a tier three quarterback his entire career who had one peak season, right?
One tier one season.
So it's all possible, like you're saying, but it's not like there's evidence that Stafford is this, he hasn't been as good as Matt Ryan. By the way, I did put that poll out there, and people thought I was crazy. I thought it was going to go the other way. The way I worded it was who had the better career. I should have said who's the better quarterback.
Yes.
And people would have been more balanced. But people are, again, there's no nuance on Twitter. I said, who's had the better career? And people are so angry that I even asked the question.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just trying to see the results. I don't think it's true. I think Matt Ryan's been better than Matthew Stafford.
90% of people or something said Matt Ryan.
90% of people said Matt Ryan. And they're right. Of course they're right. If that was the expected answer. But people are like, Steve, you're an idiot. Oh, well, you're an, like, dude, just I asked a question. You either answer it or keep scrolling. Okay? Great show, Sam. I love these discussions. You can't do too many of them. Because it's season time coming up. Don't forget, I'm drafting tonight. You're drafted tonight. Kickoff 30. Kickoff 30 for all of your fantasy needs. 30% off any PFF subscription right now. You get all of our fantasy tools for as little as $7. So go check that out over at PFF.com right now. Good show, man.
You too, Steve.
Fixing all those teams. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday.